thank you very much, Randy. I had a third grade teacher that forced us, she was cruel, to memorize. By the way, she was Methodist, and this was in a public school. We had to memorize all the books of the Bible. We had to memorize the first psalm, the second psalm, the 23rd psalm, the 100th psalm, first five verses of Genesis, John 3:16, 1 John 2:3, and she was going to do more, but that particular year we had a lot of snow, so we got shortened. This was in a public school. She justified it by saying, it's memory work. Kids need to learn how to memorize quickly and efficiently. I'm glad she did. That particular reading, though, does have some meaning for this particular lesson. Just like last week for encouragement, Psalm 23 started off with grass and how wonderful it is to have wonderful grass and that God is providing a wonderful place for us. The 100th Psalm screams loudly, unconditional love. I don't know if you ever thought about it quite that way, but it screams unconditional love. No matter how bad things get, no matter where you think you are, He's going to love us. He's going to take care of us. And with that said, we do tend to... Okay, where'd it go? I almost have to check myself. We do tend to run into a few problems from time to time that require dealing with problems. And indeed, reconciliation is a bridge over quarreled waters. And I know it's dipping into the past, and some of you have never heard Simon and Garfunkel's song, but if you haven't, look it up on YouTube sometime. It ain't too bad, but the actual name is Bridge Over Troubled Waters. I just use the word quarrel to conjure a different image. It seems that we do run across troubles from time to time. And with that said, let's just use a couple of examples from our own lives. Marriages. I've been married 34 years. Haven't made it as far as y'all have, Bob, but I hope to get there one day. We oftentimes think these things are ideals, but yet we look around us and two out of three ended up in divorce. And we look at them like, well, we're going to enter into this and it's not going to have any problems, is it? Well, wait a minute. We're going to agree on everything. We will experience nothing but togetherness, happiness, and pleasantness. And our marriage will be the best of best. Those of you who've been at this for a while, please don't pull out a six-pack. This isn't an airline flight, and you're not supposed to throw up quite yet. Then there's this reality wall, you know. Just because you think something's going great doesn't make it great. You buy a new car and you think it's great, that doesn't make it great, does it? You buy a used car, it really doesn't make it great. Just because you get married, that doesn't make life great either. You do have to work at it, just like the used car you bought or just like the new car. You do have to work at it. These things do occur. You have to work at them. And why do we think this about marriage? Well, there is such a thing as wishful thinking. I wish it, therefore it must happen. No, not quite. Sometimes there's no understanding about communication, whether implied or expressed. You know, a lot of times you think you communicated something. Becky will tell me this all the time. You didn't say that. I thought I did. Or I thought I said something and she took it another way. That's probably true too. There's often no experience with conflict resolution. And quite frankly, a lot of people have that problem. I see it at work all the time. I see it in churches too. We don't know how to deal with conflict. When things come up, I have noticed the most popular is find a large pit of sand, dig a very large hole, and stick your head in it. Also known as avoidance. Just avoid it. Don't do anything about it. Don't bring it up. Don't do anything. Just stick your head in the sand and leave it there. Let it marinate for a while. Because that's the way a lot of people like to deal with conflict. They don't have any experience with it, and they haven't read any books or talked to people or nothing, because frankly, that's the most common thing I see. That's their instrument. That's the way they deal with it. And quite frankly, there's also this belief that we can actually control our own destiny. Now, if there ain't a drug out there, I believe that's the best one available. That's the best one, is that we control our own destiny. That is a wonderful drug, that when you get into marriage, that you actually control your own destiny. I can go shooting whenever I want to, or go play golf whenever I want to. It don't work that way, folks. And same thing goes for my wife. She'd love to go to this or go do that. Or do that. Wait a minute. It's now a partnership, and you've got to share, of course. And you've got to work together to make the marriage work. We don't necessarily control our own destiny as much as we'd love to believe it. Well, let's look at the church the same way. Our church is ideal. We have elders. Awesome. We don't have any problems. Awesome. True churches never have conflict. Awesome. We make good decisions and everyone agrees. Also awesome. And everybody gets along. You can pull out the six sack now. It don't work that way, does it? Because there's that same reality wall. Yes, it's the same one that says, no, it don't work that way. Just like marriages, churches have to work together. They really do. And you got to deal with people on an individual basis. I like to think that we do it because we love each other. I love that concept. But you know, it's more than that. It's more than just loving someone. And we'll talk further about this in more detail. Why do we think this about the church? Well, there again, I'm going to use the same things. Is it wishful thinking? Do we not know how to express ourselves? Do we not communicate very well? Implied or expressed. What about conflict resolution? Do we just ignore things and let them go till they finally explode in our face? Do we really believe that we can control our own destiny inside the church the same way? If you do, that's real sad, because we can't. You can't control your own destiny. A lot of you kids growing up and getting out of high school and thinking you can control your own destiny. I have a degree in geology, a degree in biology, and I work as a quality manager. Yeah, they have nothing to do with one another. I thought I could control my destiny too. Life happens, don't it, Randy? Life happens, and you have to modify your life. You have to change. You have to be flexible. You have to learn to deal with people in different ways. You have to learn to communicate differently. You have to learn to deal with conflict in a variety of ways, because guess what? There's a variety of people, not just at work, not just at school, in church. There's a variety of people. There's loud mouths like Henry, and there's quiet people like Harry. Yes, that's exactly what you hear. It's quiet. And you have to deal with people. And when they're too quiet, you don't know what they're thinking. And when they run their mouth all the time, you're not going to get a word in edgewise. That's what life's about, people. You've got to talk to people. You're going to have to work with them. And to do that, you've also got to realize we can't control their destiny either. Well, Christians think this. I wonder why. Because there's really good evidence we have no reason to think this. None. Because Paul wrote 9 letters to churches with issues, didn't he? Let's see. Rome was in controversy about congregational control and salvation. Corinth had every problem imaginable. They deserve 2 letters for that. Galatia? Okay, I'm keeping this simple. They were confused. Ephesus could not abandon their sinful lives to save their own souls. Philippi had personal conflict. Colossae had relationship and moral issues. Thessalonica, also got two letters, had trouble taking responsibility. So why in the world should we believe that we're any better or any worse than anybody else? Why in the world should we think that just because we got elders, just because we got people that show up on a regular basis, why in the world should we believe that everything's just rosy? We should pass out rose-tinted glasses at the back door. Why? Why would you want that? Look what happened in the first century. Did it quit? Did people quit arguing? Did they quit getting in other people's faces? Did they quit? No, they didn't. People are still people. And people also forgot how to communicate with one another. And by the way, I think text messaging and email and all the rest is ruining people's ability to look at someone right in the eye and tell them the dead truth. Dead truth. Now, I text it to them. But they're not going to look them right in the eye and show some nerve and tell them the dead truth right to their face. Too often we forget what I call kindergarten 101. We forget how to play fair, clean up our own mess, and respect other people. I mean, if we did that, nobody would go to jail, right? Even if we had the finest... Wait a minute. Each person is a distinct individual, aren't they? Distinct individual. They process information differently. People like me, extroverts, they're not thinking unless their mouth is running. If you ever heard that before, but it's true. People who are strong extroverts like myself, if they're not talking, their brain is not in gear. That's just the way it works. So if you get me to shut up, I assure you, I will probably go to sleep. Just the opposite. People who are very, very quiet and they internalize all their thinking. Guess what's going on? There's a storm in there when they're quiet. They're processing all this information and getting ready to talk. They're just not talking. And when they talk, they've pre-planned it so very carefully. Now, admittedly, I'm using extremes. But to make a point, every person is different in the way they look, but in the way they talk, in the way they process information, in the way they just deal with other people. And folks, we've got to. We've got to, as brothers and sisters, we have to deal with each other. Some of them you might not like dealing with, but you still got to. Now, we each have unique talents and abilities. Some people are pretty good at singing. Some people, well, they're okay. They do make a joyful noise unto the Lord. And that's okay. But those unique talents and abilities we have to tap into because this is a volunteer organization. Now, the second you forget that, you'll find out exactly what happened to me several years ago with the Oak Ridge Church of Christ, and I was a deacon there. And they put me in charge of, similar to what Louie's doing, in charge of both the scheduling and activities for all the church classes, which was really cool. I enjoyed it. And I walked into that job with more enthusiasm than they could tolerate, by the way. And I encouraged everything from testing to, you wouldn't believe it, it's amazing the stuff that I irritated people with. Matter of fact, irritated so badly that there were numerous comments that, yeah, they hurt my feelings. Badly. So badly, in fact, that I literally told my family, get in the car, we're leaving now. In a business meeting. And David Riggs, wonderful preacher at the time, he said, Henry, please calm down, don't do this. But I was so mad, I was so blistery mad, eat up with a root of bitterness, which is where I'm going. I couldn't take it. I got in the car, we went home. I repented that night at services. I had no business getting that mad. Over what? My thin skin? It took me all afternoon to work it over. Now, by the way, the kids and Becky, they were in another room. Distance was a good thing. You know, nuclear blast, Henry, same thing. Distance is a good thing. And I will admit to you, I had a horrible temper. It's still bad, by the way, but it's mellowed. It's mellowed. I learned a lot from that experience. And one of the other gentlemen there, he and I used to do silhouette shooting out at the range. He walked up to me after it was all over with, and he said, "Henry, the one thing you need to remember desperately," he said, "I love your enthusiasm." He said, "I love what you're trying to do. I really do." He said, "But the one thing you really must understand is this is a volunteer organization. This is not a conscription. It's a volunteer organization. And everyone has their own dignity, and everyone has their own pride, and everyone has their own way of taking you. And you've really got to pay attention." He said, "I appreciate it, and you're doing as best you know how to do." He said, "But part of the reason why you got so upset is because you forgot it's a volunteer organization." And he said another thing that stuck in my mind. He said, "We surrender our will and lives in our own way." He said, "I know that sounds contradictory to what the Bible teaches. We're to surrender to Jesus. We're supposed to surrender to our elders. We are their responsibility." But he said, "Here's a reality. If you don't like what's going on, you still remember where your keys are to your car, don't you? You still remember how to drive, don't you?" And he said, "Just think of the people right here in Oak Ridge that live in West Knox and drive to Oak Ridge. Think of the people who live in Oak Ridge and they drive to West Knox, they drive to Maryville, they drive to a lot of other places. All why? Because they couldn't get along with somebody. Because they couldn't, as brothers and sisters, work out the details, learn to communicate, deal with conflict, deal with each other, truly love and care what somebody thinks." And he said, "Thank you for coming forward and, yeah, bearing your soul and a level of embarrassment." He said, "But thank you so much for that." And I learned a lot from it. I did cry a little bit, but not much. But God uses these differences, folks, for His purpose. Randy has a big smile and jumps out there, and I love it. And Richard, he'll study something to death, and I love it. And we're all different, aren't we? We all have our strengths, our weaknesses, our way of looking at people and making them smile, our way of looking at people and making them happy. And we also have that way of sticking the foot out there and tripping them. But it's our choice. We can make or break each other, folks. Make or break. We can choose to love each other and be a part of each other's lives and make these differences work for us, or we can choose to not. Can't we? Because God will use them for His purposes. Think of Barnabas, Paul, and Mark. All three had to deal with differences, didn't they? Wait a minute. All three forgot kindergarten 101 at one time or another. We'll go over that in just a second. All three handled differences differently, but all three, in the end, when it was all said and done, all three were used by God for His purpose. Didn't it? Was a Jew of Jews. He was unmarried, highly educated. He believed in all his heart that the crucified Jesus was an imposter, a liar, and a fraud. He rejoiced in the execution of Christians. He dedicated his life to destroying the church, and he definitely had, as they say in the military, mission blindness, because he only saw one goal. In the military, they call it mission blindness because you've been given a fuel depot to go blow up. And you take off, you've got your hard points filled with napalm, you're on your way to that one target. And you see four or five on the way, and you forget them. What? Your job is to blow things up. Nope, you forget them. You've got the mission. You lose your wingman, you forget it. You got your mission. Now the military doesn't like that. They actually prefer you not to have mission blindness. Because guess what they're in the business of? Blowing things up. That's what they do for a living. And if you see a couple on the way, you can just save a few, drop a few here, drop a few there. But you'd be surprised the number of pilots and people in charge of missions that forget. And they get mission blindness. And Paul had mission blindness. Now Barnabas, he was among some of the first converts of the first congregation that ever existed. He was there when the congregation shared everything, Acts 4, 36 and 37. He sold everything, gave all to help other people. He was a, as I would put it, a people person. Exceptionally nice. I would probably, if I met him, I'd probably think he was exceptionally nice. The mission was the people to Barnabas. Now, as you already know, Paul was in trouble. The Jewish leaders who encouraged Paul to persecute Christians saw him as a traitor. They want him dead. That simple. He is a problem. Get rid of the problem. Wait a minute. Christians didn't like him either. What was he doing? Well, he was doing house-to-house searches, and he was a party to killing Stephen, or Stephen losing his life. So Christians didn't like him. The Jews didn't like him. He's got a problem. Barnabas was willing to take, look at it this way, was willing to take a personal risk. Because what are the Jews going to think of him if he vouches for them? Nothing good. What are the other Christians going to do when he vouches for them? They're going to kind of worry about Barnabas. If they know him real good, that's one thing. But they're going to worry about him. He took a big personal risk to vouch for Paul. He really did. He took a big personal risk. But Paul was able to gain that trust and was smuggled out of town. Awesome. Because Paul and Barnabas, kind of like peanut butter and jelly, they became a team. Because of the conflict they went through, because of the trust and shared risk, they became a team. Acts 11, 23-26 in Antioch. Antioch was too much for one person, though. Really and truly. It didn't really matter who went there. Because of all the things going on in Antioch, Paul needed a wingman. He needed him. They needed to work out details together. They needed to be bouncing ideas off of one another all night long, because they traveled and taught together for over a year. Can you imagine how well they got to know each other? Oh no, don't give me the fish. It never settles well. They got to know each other pretty well. In good and bad situations, they knew how the other one was going to react. They became a very effective team working together. Now, by the way, let me stop for a second. You'll find out one of my styles is I love definitions. I probably could have been a lawyer, but whatever. A team is a cooperative effort to develop trust, project commitment, open communication, and shared risk. Let me give you an example. Let's say you've got a center, a guard, and a tackle, and they don't like the quarterback. How long is the quarterback going to last? He didn't. see, they have to share the same risk as the quarterback. Because if they're not sharing the same risk, that big linebacker that looks like a refrigerator is going to kill him. He won't have a chance. They've got to be willing to take some of that pain instead of sharing it with the quarterback so that he can get his job done. Hand off the ball, pass the ball, whatever. They've got to share the risk. That's the one thing people forget about on teams. They think it's just get a bunch of people together and, wow, it works. And we'll all have the same goal, make touchdowns or whatever, make money in a business. But they forget shared risk. Wait a minute, it works that way in churches, don't it? What if we forget to share the risk, to take risk, whether it's to lead singing or teach a class or be an elder or take the risk of being a deacon and be in charge of some building materials and things? What if you forget to take those risks, personal risk, dealing with people, personal risk? What if you forget to do that? What happens? The quarterback gets slaughtered. Conciliate. It's a root word of another one I'm going to get to next. It means to accommodate. Folks, we do have to accommodate from time to time. We just have to accommodate. You have to deal with people. You got to accommodate. You can't have your way all the time. Although my granddaughter Georgia still thinks that she has to have the way all the time. Such is life. Then there's reconcile. That's taking two things that don't go together and making it work. For example, in chemistry, you can make oil dissolve in water. And I don't mean shake it up and make a suspension. You can make oil dissolve in water. What you do is take the oil, you subject it to a caustic, like in the old days we called it red devil lye, but it's sodium hydroxide or potassium hydroxide. It literally takes the oil and makes it into a hydroxide too. Now dissolve in water in a heartbeat. The reaction's reversible. Put salt in it. It goes the other way and they'll separate. Awesome. Just think of all the foods they can feed us because of that one reaction. But they can make oil go into solution in water. Wow. We have to do the same thing. We have to take individuals you can't get along with and learn to get along with them. We have to be accommodating, and we have to create that bridge over troubled waters. We have to build bridges. Now, one day, Acts 13, 1 through 2, they took a young Christian named Mark with them. For some reason left early and returned home. Now, I don't know if it was a commitment deal, you know. Hey, I'll go with you guys. Oh, man, it sounds like a cool road trip. Really does. Oh, man. How long are we going to be gone? I was thinking a couple of weeks. I've got other commitments I've already made. I have an aging father. I wasn't told. I've got an aging father. That would be a commitment. I've got children. I've got this. I've got those are commitments. For some reason, he either didn't count the commitments, or he got scared and broke and run. I don't know why he left, but he left. He left. We don't know why. Now, a few years later, Paul and Barnabas get back together and they're thinking, hey man, first road trip was cool. Let's do another one. Barnabas says, hey, I want Mark to come. Paul says emphatically, no. And they broke up as a team. Was committed to people. Think about how he felt about Mark. Paul was committed in mind and body to an objective. Barnabas saw value in Mark. Paul saw no value in Mark, stated so. And Barnabas took Mark and Paul took Silas. Now, can you imagine how Paul felt when Barnabas went against him? Remember, they were a nice team for about a year. Knew each other very well. Look at how he felt about Barnabas. never stated it anywhere, but reckon how he would feel if he went against him and took him anyhow and then went another direction. Think about the people around you and people other places you've met over the years. If something of this nature came up, can you imagine a root of bitterness coming up? Is it possible? I wonder how Mark felt. Let's look at everybody. See how everybody felt. Reckon how Mark felt. Reckon he was oblivious to the whole thing? Do you think he felt rejected? Put down and humiliated. Maybe felt his faith was attacked by Paul. Maybe felt it was his fault that Paul left his friend Barnabas. Maybe even guilt for coming between two friends. It's a weird way to look at it, isn't it? I know these situations cause anger. I know these situations cause deep hurt. I know they cause resentment. Please don't ask me to tell you how I know. Please, if you do, do it on the side somewhere and I'll tell you. Beware, I may start crying. I do know. You probably do too if you think about it. They do cause anger, deep hurt, deep resentment. It's easy to be bitter, folks. Easy. And in Hebrews 12:15, see to it that no one fails to obtain the grace of God, which, by the way, is why we're here, that no root of bitterness springs up and causes trouble, and by it, the root of bitterness, many become defiled. Folks, bitterness is it's a powerful emotion. It is deadly. It is deadly. It'll get you to thinking you need to be somewhere else. It'll get you to want to give up even going to church. I know what happened to me one time. The Fort Payne Church of Christ one time wanted to fire the preacher. And guess what happened? I found out that any preacher worth their weight can split a church right down the middle. Boom! And that's exactly what happened. Half of us went to Sand Mountain, the other half stayed right there in Fort Payne. But to this day, guess where both churches are? Nowhere. Nowhere. Bitterness is dangerous. Dangerous. I call to your attention two things, though. I won't take up much more of your time. When Paul wrote to the Corinthians, he used Barnabas as a positive illustration, 1 Corinthians 9, 1-6. And in his last letter, Paul stated, Mark was useful to me, 1 Timothy 4:11. Luke alone is with me. Get Mark and bring him with you, for he is very useful for ministry. See, Paul had reconciled, not just with other people, but within his own head. He had to build a bridge to deal with these emotions. He had to. Years later, bring Mark. He's useful. Realize this. We do not dare live in the past. We do not dare undo what we did in the past. Boy, I sure wish I could. But we can bridge enmity and quarrels of the past with reconciliation. Reconciliation is everything, folks. It's everything. How we deal with people, face to face, with love and actual care. I hope I always treat y'all that way. If I don't, do me a big favor. Tell me. I treat you with respect. I show love. I show concern. If I don't, tell me. Because we need to be able to trust and share our risk to build a team. I don't mean that in the wrong way. I mean that in the right way. That we need to be able to build that trust, that shared risk. Because folks, one of two things is going to happen when we die. We're either going to be with Jesus, or we're going to be with all the fallen angels. It's that simple. It's that simple. We got to learn to get along. Be compatible. Build bridges. This was not another one of those lessons why I didn't design it to encourage those to become Christians. It was one of those lessons I hoped I could encourage people to love, take care of one another, and be a part of each other's lives. When I say be a part of each other's lives, I mean be a part of each other's lives. You know when they're hurting. You know when they're happy. You know when they got a problem and you're there for them. I'm still a newbie here, barely been here a year. I'm getting to know you. Let's work on it some more. If there's anyone that needs to become a Christian, this is an awesome opportunity. There's no better time than the present. If there's those that they've got a problem they need to share with the congregation as a whole, let's not air dirty laundry, so to speak. But if you need the prayers of the congregation and the elders, please come forward as we stand and sing.